Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vice President Kamala Harris concedes defeat to former President Donald Trump.
Earlier today, I spoke with President-elect Trump and congratulated him on his victory. I also told him that we will help him and his team with their transition, and that we will engage in a peaceful transfer of power.
African presidents congratulate Trump on U.S. election victory. We'll talk live with VOA reporters at Harris's and President-elect Donald Trump's campaign headquarters in Washington, D.C. and Florida. An analyst says Trump will most likely address issues more aligned with African leaders in his second term. Nigerian presidency says the country's army chief is dead. Those story and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Good morning once again, Africa, and welcome to VOA's live coverage of this very important 2024 U.S. election. Joining me here in our Washington, D.C. studio is VOA's Carol Van Dam. Good morning to you, Carol.
Thanks. Good morning to you too, James. So Vice President Kamala Harris has conceded defeat to former President Donald Trump in the 2024 presidential election. As we stated, Trump never conceded to President Joe Biden following the 2020 election. Harris delivered her concession speech Wednesday afternoon at her alma mater, Howard University, here in Washington, D.C., and vowed to continue the fight for freedom, opportunity, fairness, and the dignity of all people.
Now I know folks are feeling and experiencing a range of emotions right now. I get it. But we must accept the results of this election. Earlier today, I spoke with President-elect Trump and congratulated him on his victory. I also told him that we will help him and his team with their transition, and that we will engage in a peaceful transfer of power. A fundamental principle of American democracy is that when we lose an election, we accept the results. That principle, as much as any other, distinguishes democracy from monarchy or tyranny. And anyone who seeks the public trust must honor it. At the same time, in our nation, we owe loyalty not to a president or a party, but to the Constitution of the United States. And loyalty to our conscience and to our God. My allegiance to all three is why I am here to say, while I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign. The fight for freedom, for opportunity, for fairness, and the dignity of all people. A fight for the ideals at the heart of our nation, the ideals that reflect America at our best. That is a fight I will never give up. I will never give up the fight for a future where Americans can pursue their dreams, ambitions, and aspirations, where the women of America have the freedom to make decisions about their own body and not have their government telling them what to do. We will never give up the fight to protect our schools and our streets from gun violence. And America, we will never give up the fight for our democracy, for the rule of law, for equal justice, and for the sacred idea that every one of us, no matter who we are or where we start out, has certain fundamental rights and freedoms that must be respected and upheld. And we will continue to wage this fight in the voting booth, in the courts, and in the public square.
That is Vice President Harris giving her concession speech following her defeat to former President Donald Trump in the 2024 election. Trump announced his victory very early Wednesday morning to an adoring crowd at the Palm Beach Convention Center. Here's a bit of what he had to say.
Well, I want to thank you all very much. I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. This will truly be the golden age of America. It's time to put the divisions of the past 4 years behind us. It's time to unite. And we're going to try. We're going to try. We have to try. And it's going to happen. Success will bring us together. I will govern by a simple motto: promises made, promises kept. We're going to keep our promises. Nothing will stop me from keeping my word to you, the people.
That was President-elect Trump speaking early this morning from his headquarters in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Let's join our White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadekuswara, who was at Vice President Harris's campaign headquarters at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Good morning, Patsy.
Good morning to you, or good evening from Washington, D.C.
Thank you. I am sure it wasn't the speech that the crowd was expecting. How would you describe the atmosphere at Howard University?
Well, as Harris was speaking, I can see a lot of people were crying, were hugging, were leaning onto each other. I spoke to some of the supporters there after they listened to her speech, and many of them were saying that they're feeling a mix of emotion, despair, sadness, anger even, disbelief. But many of them also said that after hearing Harris speak, they feel a little bit better, a little bit more hopeful, a little bit feeling that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But definitely it was a different kind of feeling than last night. I think last night was very grim, very somber, very dark, full of despair. And this afternoon was a little bit lighter. There's a sense of resignation also, I think, among the crowd. But certainly Harris was given a lot of applause, as well as Governor Tim Walz and Mrs. Walz that also showed up, as well as the second gentleman, Doug Emhoff.
That is correct, because maybe I thought my eyes were deceiving me as I watched Vice President Harris's speech, because I think I saw the grown-ups that you were talking about, they were crying. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people actually avoided speaking to journalists because they were just so distraught and they were crying and very emotional. One thing also that I noticed, a lot of women felt it especially so, because they felt that, again, their candidate, their female candidate, lost to Donald Trump. I mean, this is a repeat of 2016. I was there in the Javits Center where the Hillary Clinton headquarters was in 2016, and there was a lot of parallels. It felt almost a little bit of a deja vu, as you know, people were optimistic earlier on in the day, and then later on, as more and more states were called to Trump, the optimism turned into despair. I think there's a little less shock this year in 2024 compared to 2016, because the polls have always been telling us that the race is close. In 2016, I think there was a lot more anticipation, or a lot more expectation that Clinton was going to win, but still the disappointment felt the same.
Patsy, thank you very much again for joining us this morning. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And on the line with us from West Palm Beach, Florida, the site of President-elect Trump's campaign headquarters, is VOA senior correspondent Carolyn Pursuti. Good morning, Carolyn.
Hello, Carol.
I bet things are a tad. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to bet that things are a tad more cheerful there.
Oh my goodness, I'd say so. Yes, from last night when we were at the convention center until the wee hours of the morning, people just didn't want to leave. They did not want to leave that floor. And finally, you know, the people came around who managed the convention center and said, "Okay, guys, you've got to go home. Go home.
Stop
go
partying.
Home. We're done here.
Stop partying."
So, yes, exactly, exactly. So the parties continue today. I was actually surprised to see this on the streets of West Palm Beach today. People still waving their flags, their Trump Vance flags, to passing cars honking, which is normally seen during the election, right? During the campaign and especially on election day. But they continued it today on many of the bridges around here. And wow, has the security ramped up a lot in this town now that former President Trump is President-elect Donald Trump? We saw so many more cars, so many more, heard so many more sirens and cars with the lights on top, motorcades going around town. I'm sure that were those motorcades were a lot of people leaving after coming in for the convention center gathering.
It sounds like it might have been hard to sleep last night.
Well, I was at the convention center, so I can't tell you. I only got a couple hours of sleep.
Wow.
I think like a lot of us here at the VOA.
Well, besides,
it was a very short night, but it's expected every 4 years.
Right. Besides that clip that we just heard, if you got down to the more newsworthy part of his early morning speech, what else did he have to say?
Well, he definitely took a different tone on this speech, and it was one more of unifying. He talked about healing and coming together over what's happened in the past 4 years. We've been in such extreme corners in this country, and it sounded like more of a speech that we would have expected from him after his assassination attempt. And he was softer at the beginning when he gave that first speech at the Republican National Convention, but then kind of fell into the normal sniping and name-calling during the campaign that candidates often do. But last night, we did see a different side of Trump, more appreciative, whole family up on stage. And so that was interesting. And today, you know, it was just a congratulatory day. He met with a lot of people. He met with his transition team, got a lot of calls on the phone from international leaders, spoke with Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky, French President Emmanuel Macron, also Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. You know, he called it the greatest comeback in history. And I thought that was interesting because it was playing off what J.D. Vance said last night. J.D. Vance said it's the biggest political comeback in history.
And, of course, Netanyahu being the Israeli prime minister.
Yes, correct. So, you know, he was hearing from a lot of people. Arab leaders congratulated him, too. And I know you mentioned the African leader also spoke with him. And then a lot of people called and asked for a job. That's what we're hearing. So he'll be hiring a lot of government workers, and I'm sure a lot of people will be tapping him for that as well. In addition, the transition team is meeting already today, one day after the election. And we got a statement from them, and it says, let me find it here, the American people decisively elected President Trump in a historic victory and delivered a mandate that puts the working men and women of our nation first as he chooses the best people to join his team, best policies to pursue. His transition team will ensure the implementation of President Trump's common sense agenda starting on day one. So it sounds like they're hitting the ground running. They're ready to go into action today. And last night, I talked to the media director from Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s team, and he said, oh, yeah, we're going to start planning the agency tomorrow. We're going to start planning our attempts dealing with health in this country. Before he left last night, before he left the convention center, that's what he was saying.
Besides Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and he's, you know, a person and a controversial figure in and of himself, but what about that transition team? Did you get a look at him, and did you see any familiar faces from, you know, 8 years ago?
Well, these are two people who are leading the transition team. So we don't have any video of team meeting, and this was a statement that they put out. But, you know, as you mentioned, who's going to be in the transition, right? And who are the people that are going to be hired? Well, the question is, what is the role of Elon Musk in this administration?
Yeah.
He apparently wants to be a consultant and involved somewhere, and certainly he's a brilliant man, right? It'll be interesting to see how the chips fall in this administration, where Elon Musk ends up, where Robert F. Kennedy Jr. ends up, where all these people that have helped on the sidelines and spoken out on Team Trump's behalf all during the campaign, how they form the cabinet.
Elon Musk, of course, being the SpaceX owner, the Tesla owner, the richest man on Earth, basically.
Yeah.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Carolyn.
So he does know a lot about numbers, so he would be a good money man, economics.
Great. Thanks very much. That's VOA senior correspondent Carolyn Pursuti speaking with us live from former President Trump's campaign headquarters in Florida.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 7th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. This programming note, VOA Special Daybreak Africa U.S. election coverage continues Thursday, beginning at 0400 hours UTC.
Are congratulating former President and now President-elect Trump on winning the U.S. election Wednesday. Kate Bartlett in Johannesburg spoke to analysts about what a second Trump presidency could mean for the continent.
Donald Trump's victory over Democratic candidate Vice President Kamala Harris dominated the news cycle across Africa on Wednesday, with coverage reflecting the anxiety being felt by some on the continent. In South Africa, the newspaper Business Day ran an opinion column headlined, Trump's comeback heralds harder U.S. approach to Africa, while another local newspaper, the Sunday Times, was running a poll for readers asking, are you worried about Donald Trump being elected U.S. president? A cartoon by renowned South African political cartoonist Sapiro in the Daily Maverick newspaper depicted a frightened-looking globe watching TV as U.S. election results came in. The markets were also affected, with South Africa's currency, the rand, dropping almost 3% on the news in the early hours of trading. Trump inspires mixed views on the continent, having riled some by calling African countries a derogatory name in his first term, and being viewed positively by others as a kind of strongman leader. Stephen Groost, a political analyst with the South African Institute of International Affairs, told VOA that Trump did not pay much attention to Africa in his first term, and he doesn't expect that to change.
Africa is not going to be a priority for the second Trump administration by any measure, and I don't think we should expect too much. I think we're also going to see a world that has a very different USA in operation, and African countries will have to decide how they deal with that.
Asanda Ngo-Sheng, an independent analyst in Cape Town, said she believes a Trump presidency will affect Africa in terms of trade, with South Africa possibly seeing its exports to the U.S. reduced. Ngo-Sheng said public health funding for Africa could also be affected under the incoming Republican administration, particularly for reproductive health. Likewise, any reduction in U.S. contributions to the United Nations could have negative effects on the continent, she said.
Donald Trump has been very clear that his administration will be an America-first administration. This is going to have implications for Africa.
As is diplomatic custom, leaders around the world congratulated the U.S. election winner. Kenyan President William Ruto, who recently paid a state visit to the U.S. at President Joe Biden's invitation, praised what he called Trump's visionary, bold, and innovative leadership. Nigerian leader Bola Tinubu said he hoped Trump's presidency would usher in an era of beneficial and reciprocal economic and development partnerships between Africa and the U.S. And South Africa's Cyril Ramaphosa said he looked forward to continuing a mutually beneficial partnership between the two countries. The statements come as African governments are hoping the U.S. will next year renew the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. The preferential trade policy gives some countries duty-free access to the U.S. market. However, the president of the Seychelles, Wavel Ramkhalawan, had other concerns about what a second Trump presidency could mean for his Indian Ocean island nation, which is under particular threat from climate change and rising sea levels.
We are going through a climate crisis. So will the U.S. once again pull out of the Paris Agreement? What is the future? What will be the pronouncement of President Trump?
Ramkhalawan, speaking at a press event in Johannesburg, was referring to the fact that in his first term, Trump withdrew the U.S. from a major international agreement to limit global warming. The U.S. rejoined the pact under President Biden. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Political strategist Joseph Slavik Soto was part of the Republican Party electoral campaign. He tells reporter Eddie Isango of VOA's Lingala service that former President Donald Trump will have a more focused approach than his previous tenure and is likely to address issues that are more aligned with African leaders.
President Trump was nominated 3 times by the Republican Party and elected twice as president. I think this is a second mandate for the president to implement the issues of strong economic growth, dealing with immigration, and bringing in world security to the world, particularly Ukraine, Israel, and Palestine. And I think even within the African context, you will see support by President Trump for missions in Sudan. So I think in terms of President Trump getting elected, this is a clear mandate. Not only did he win the popular vote, the House and the Senate, it is a complete sweep.
And what are the biggest change that we may expect from his administration?
I think what you'll see from President Trump is a more focused second term. I think in the first term, since he was new to governance, there was a lot of time lost. But this time, because of the Senate, I think the president will have a mandate, and I think he will see very quick decisions made. But I think the strategic relationship, and as you know, with President Trump, it is critical that there is a, should we say, cult of personality, meaning that I think President Trump relies heavily on direct interactions with people. So I think from the African point of view, you know, those African heads of state who can connect and communicate with President Trump in a simple and clear fashion will be able to advance a lot of the issues both in, you know, on the world stage and within the African context.
Yes, that was my question, because the first one was what the biggest change that we may expect from his administration. But now, considering the international relation, what may the world expect from him, mostly the Africa?
I think from African point of view, as I said, I think you will find security and economics to be the priority. As you know, there are current social issues that the Biden administration was highlighting. For instance, in Uganda, there was discussions with regard to the homosexuality laws, and this has ruptured the relationship there. I don't think you'll see issues in terms of that for President Trump. I think security, economics, and dealing with Russia and China on the continent. And of course, we have strategic and critical minerals and oil and gas. So in this sense, I think the priorities for the Trump administration will be much, much more different from those of the Biden administration.
Political strategist Joseph Slavik Soto was part of the Republican Party electoral campaign. He spoke with reporter Eddie Isango of the U.S. Lingala service.
South Sudan peace talks, previously held in neighboring Kenya, will resume under a directive from South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and his Kenyan counterpart William Ruto. They met on Wednesday and directed the mediation team to reconvene and resolve all outstanding issues within 2 weeks. The talks had stalled after the party of Kiir's former rival, Riek Machar, withdrew in July, citing plans by the mediators to replace the 2018 peace agreement that had ended a 5-year civil war in which more than 400,000 people died. South Sudan is going through an economic crisis that has seen civil servants go unpaid for nearly a year after oil exports were disrupted by a damaged pipeline in war-torn neighboring Sudan. Mozambique's capital was tense on Wednesday, on the eve of a march called by the opposition leader following weeks of protests against election results that have left at least 18 people dead. Shops and banks in central Maputo closed early and the streets were emptier than usual, while police and military vehicles were stationed at various points, according to the French news agency AFP. About 1,000 people demonstrated in the afternoon in the city's Patrice Lumumba neighborhood in support of Thursday's march called by opposition leader Venancio Mondlane.
And that's it for this Thursday, November 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. Tune in again in 30 minutes for more of VOA Africa extended coverage of the U.S. elections. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty, along with my colleague Carol Van Damme in Washington, and we'll be back in 30 minutes with more election coverage.